I know you're already thinking about the 2020 election, because we are. Okay, not so much. We try not to think about it here on the show. But today we are thinking about it because we had a very special guest in Minnesota. Noah Prates is the former director of elections for Cook County, Illinois. He's now a consultant for the Department of Homeland Security. He also served as co-chair of the Cybersecurity Committee on the election of the Election Center. Now, election fraud, election meddling, election influence has played a huge role in our lives in the last few years. And we often wonder, right here in Minnesota, okay, how does it affect us? What's going on in our voting booths? Well, today, Noah testified in front of the Election Security Funding Conference Committee here in Minnesota, and he's joining us to answer some questions. Noah, welcome to the program.
Hey, Noah.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
I also realize that Minnesota is the only state in the country that doesn't have federal funds yet for election security. Should we be concerned locally about our election security, Noah?
Well, I think nationwide, everybody recognizes or has got to recognize that you've got to defend your software and hardware systems. And if you don't defend them, the chance that something goes wrong, whether that's from bad guys overseas or bad guys hanging out here in this country, the chances of that happening go way up. So, yeah, you got to invest.
Noah, I lived in your fair city for 3 years, lived just north of Chicago, and had a great time down there. But I'll never forget, a number of people came up and said, yeah, the motto is in Chicago. At least it was, I think, back in the Mayor Daley time, vote early, vote often. I know Chicago had some issues with voting irregularities. Is there any evidence, based on the data that you've seen, that there are voting irregularities in Minnesota? People who should not be voting are actually casting votes.
Well, certainly that's not my specialty and not the reason I came to testify today. I don't have any personal knowledge of that.
So let's talk about what you told the Election Security Funding Conference Committee. Are you trying to prepare them for the next election because something is vulnerable?
Well, so I think my main message was that cyber risks are real. Most people, you can't go down a highway or listen to a radio without hearing about cyber risks and about asking for their individual's investment in being able to protect their own information. And that is just a grander scale when it comes to government systems. If you look at the Mueller report that came out recently, if it said anything else, it underlined what all election officials know, and that's that there are serious bad guys that live overseas that want to have an effect on elections in America, whether that's through the use of misinformation campaigns in the social media sphere or direct targeting of election infrastructure like there was in Illinois. I mean, for goodness sake, we were the epicenter in 2016 where Russian into our voter registration system.
So tell us about that. What happened in Chicago and how were the elections affected by Russian hackers?
Well, so Illinois is a sort of different state. It's called bottom up, which means every one of the counties has their own voter registration system. And what was attacked in Illinois was the statewide voter registration system. And in fact, it was just a copy of it that was online for things like online voter registration or online lookup. But for a number of weeks, bad guys were in there stealing information, trying to do worse things until Illinois officials finally caught them. They took the system down, repaired those vulnerabilities, went back online. But the potential there is significant. If you're able to do that in other states, and you don't catch them quick enough, then it can affect the way things go on election day.
No, I'm just curious your reaction as a citizen and as a voter yourself. Earlier today, senior presidential advisor Jared Kushner suggested that the special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation was more harmful to the U.S. than Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Here's what he said. You look at what Russia did, buying some Facebook ads to try and sow dissent and do it. It's a terrible thing. But I think the investigations and all the speculation that's happened for the last 2 years has had a much harsher impact on our democracy than a couple of Facebook ads. just curious, what is your reaction to that?
Well, there certainly was a misinformation campaign, Facebook ads, bots, but there was also a direct attack on election infrastructure. So I'd respectfully disagree with the scope and level of impact. But I think that there is a point there, if you can take what everybody says and find a silver lining. Elections are precious things. We need to be honest about them and not hyperbolic. And to that extent, I think it's very important that we look sideways at folks when they claim that there's rampant voter fraud, or equally when they claim that there's none. We need to take seriously our professional intelligence community and law enforcement when they tell us that there are vulnerabilities that were exploited by foreign nations. There are trusted sources telling us that we need to expect sophisticated and increasing attacks, and that we should prepare for them. The best way to do that is to increase our investment in the defenses of our systems, one, and to two, build policies that ensure that even if our software systems come down, we can still put out election results that are trusted and true. Luckily, in Minnesota, you've got paper ballots for everybody. You've got audits. It's possible to put out election results that are trusted and true, even if the software comes down. That's not the case all over the country, but it's a good story here.
So you were talking to the Election Security Funding Conference Committee today in Minnesota. We're still the only state who doesn't have federal money for this. Were you trying to persuade them to approve federal funding for this? And are we using it, as you mentioned, for precautionary, sort of to build up those firewalls?
Well, so I wanted to share, I was asked to share my experience in Illinois about how real things can happen and how you can undertake efforts to decrease the likelihood of that. I certainly didn't come here to get sort of mixed up in local politics, but what's certainly true is that in 49 states, the federal investment of nearly $380 million is out. It's supporting state and local election officials all over the country. They're moving forward along a maturity path that I think that the officials that run elections in Minnesota would really like to join them on.
Noah, 20 seconds left. Are we moving in the right direction? Are you witnessing progress on a state-by-state basis? Or, I mean, what keeps you up at night?
Well, so there's been tremendous progress. You know, 2 years ago, the federal government didn't know who to call in the states when things happened. Today, there's a relationship between the Department of Homeland Security and all 50 states, including the 56 with the territories, got direct one-on-one communication with nearly 2,000 local election authorities. We're sharing information, which is great. A local election official sees something, it shares it up. The federal government churns it through and shares it back down. There are some really good news stories. Okay. We just need to keep investing.
Very Noah good. Prates, former director of elections for Cook County, Illinois. We hope you enjoyed your time in our great state today, sir.
Oh, it's beautiful. Thank you. Great day.
Thank you, Noah.
Noah is also a consultant for the Department of Homeland Security now. And I mean, that's, I want to have confidence in our next election.
I think we all do.
I want to know that my vote matters and it's being counted properly.
Yeah, boy.
And not being influenced or changed or messed with or any way. I mean, I'm smart enough not to know, to know about the Russian bots, and you're smart enough to know about Russian meddling and fake news on Facebook.
Are we?
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
it's
we are.
Pretty sophisticated.
We are. Folks listening to the show are. They
okay.
are.
I hope you're right.
But, you know, what we can't guard against is somebody in, you know, some Nowheresville getting into, hacking into our systems and affecting it. That's scary.
When we come back, Elon Musk, that Elon Musk of Tesla, envisions an army of robot taxis.
Yes.
Next year.
Yes.
And he's apparently making the investment to make that happen. Just one of many stories that made us do a triple take. That's coming up next. Our prayers have been answered. An army of robo-taxis is coming.
Bring it.
Not in 10 years, 20 years. According to Elon Musk, who has a bit of a habit of over-predicting, but a lot of people have lost a lot of money betting against Elon Musk. So, yeah, you can take it with a grain of salt. We'll see. He's predicting the arrival of a million robo-taxis, 1 million Teslas will be on the road that are fully capable of driving themselves as of next year.
Bring it.
2020. Yeah.
Maybe before my kid gets her license so I can just ship her off in a robo-taxi.
His vision is to bring affordable electric cars to the masses. So think of this maybe as electrified Uber. Uber with Teslas.
Yeah. Without the human error of drivers. Although, yes, there will be errors in the robots. I get it. Nothing is perfect, especially in the beginning. But bring it. I'm excited.
And he talked to investors earlier today, and he said customers will be able to put their cars onto a shared network of robo-taxis, which will be able to get around without a human inside.
Bring it.
He's 47 years old. He's never shied away from outlandish predictions. The timeline is hugely ambitious. And then he went on to say, and again, no shortage of hubris with this guy. The fundamental message that consumers should be taking today is that it's financially insane to buy anything other than a Tesla. It will be like owning a horse.
The owner.
It will be like owning a horse in 3 years.
I think
that's a bit of a stretch, but he's a little prone to hyperbole. But it's interesting. It's like, think of this as Airbnb for your vehicle. If you have an electric vehicle, you can... It sounds like you'll be able to just loan your vehicle mm-hmm. onto the network when you're not using it
right.
at work. Instead of it sitting in a parking ramp,
maybe and then it drives itself.
It drives itself. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're getting a cut. You're mm-hmm. getting paid mm-hmm. to have your vehicle in the network. So it kind of sounds like that's where he's going. Airbnb for electrified vehicles.
I love it.
So we shall see. All right. What
Walgreens,
you got?
Okay, listen to this. Walgreens has announced it will no longer sell tobacco to anyone under 21. This is coming in September. Remember a few years ago and CVS said, we're not selling tobacco anymore. We are a health and wellness company mm-hmm. and we are not selling any tobacco products. I cheered that. I thought that was fantastic. I think it's great. Go CVS. Well, Walgreens says, okay, we're still going to make the money, but you got to be 21. Now, even if it's 18 years, you know, to buy cigarettes in your state. Well, the move comes a few weeks after a federal official called the drugstore chain a top violator of laws restricting access to cigarettes, smokeless tobacco, and other product. There were 1,800 violations for letting people underage buy tobacco. So the FDA was going to threaten them, say, no, no, you can't sell it for at least 30 days. So they came out and said, you know what? Got to be 21. I commend anything like this. I think they shouldn't be selling them at all. You're getting your drugs at the Walgreens that the lung cancer caused. So you shouldn't be selling the tobacco.
I agree. It's a step in the right direction. Yeah. I found this interesting, Jor. Nobody's going to hold you down and forcibly administer a vaccine.
But
a judge in Brooklyn has upheld a mandatory measles vaccination order, ruling against a group of parents who had argued that New York City health officials had overstepped their authority. Listen to this quote from Judge Lawrence Kneipel. He said, quote, a fireman need not obtain the informed consent of the owner before extinguishing a house fire. Vaccination is known to extinguish the fire of contagion.
Well, that's a little extreme.
Well, it's a mouthful, but I get his point.
Another word, fire with measles.
He denied the parents' petition seeking to lift Mayor Bill de Blasio's vaccination order that hoped to stem the city's worst measles outbreak since 1991. Again, this is happening in Brooklyn, specific neighborhoods. People refuse to obtain the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella, and they could face fines. An attorney for the parents who are resisting vaccination estimate that only 0.0006% of the population of Brooklyn and Queens had measles. His quote, it's not an epidemic, it's not Ebola, it's not smallpox. And yet, if my kid was infected with measles because your kid didn't get the MMR vaccine, mm-hmm. I'd be pretty outraged.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Sneak this in. Let's hear it for the boys. The Minnesota State High School League has agreed to a settlement, really, because they got in trouble, that will allow boys to compete on high school dance teams. It's beginning next year, beginning in the 2019-2020 school year. The league's decision followed a March ruling in an appeals court that said two boys in the Roseville and Hopkins schools are allowed to be part of their school's competitive dance teams. My kids go to Hopkins. I want to see that boy dance. I think this is fantastic. The fact that boys were banned from the dance team in the beginning is wrong. These boys must be incredible dancers. They should be allowed to dance.
Wait, that, gender equality goes both ways? Really?
Yes.
Yes?
Dance it up, boys. Huh? I want to see you out there at the football games. I want to see you in your competitions. I want to see you dancing with the girls. More boys can join. The more, the better. And I love everything about this decision. So, boys, dance it up.
This may sound radical, but I believe you had the freedom to be you, and you have the freedom to do things that make you happy.
The freedom to
As long
dance.
As you're not hurting anybody else, go for it.
Music is in you. Dance
Congrats.
Up. I love that decision.
All right.
It's also 4:30. We are going, those were the headlines. We're going way beyond the headlines when we return.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Boy, this guy is lucky. A family has revealed the incredible story of the only sailor to survive the Titanic and the Lusitania.
Lusitania, yeah.
I practiced even. I knew I was going to screw it up. Lusitania. George Beauchamp. He's the sole person to escape with his life from two of the worst maritime disasters of the 20th century.
Maybe he should not be sailing. Maybe he should not be on the water.
Right. Okay, he was working as a fire stoker below the deck when the Titanic hit the iceberg. That was in 1912, and the Lusitania in 1915. He told his loved ones after the Lusitania, he said, "I've had enough of large ships. I'm going to work on smaller boats." Good choice.
Wow. All right. I have a drone, a little drone. Mm-hmm. My boys bought me a drone for my last birthday.
And do you use it? Is
it's
it fun?
Pretty cool, yeah.
Spy on the neighbors and do creepy stuff?
I crashed into trees. Nice. I'm still kind of getting the hang of it. You should not fly the thing with big trees around. Mm-hmm. I discovered that the hard way. Google has a subsidiary called Wing, and they're going to be doing commercial drone deliveries here in the United States. They just got the green light from the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. And they're starting off in Virginia. These drones are electric-powered. They can fly as fast as 75 miles an hour. They emit no greenhouse gases. They travel without any human guidance. They use Wing, the subsidiary, artificial intelligence and machine learning systems, which mean they get smarter over time. They actually learn,
That's cool.
which is a little terrifying. Mm-hmm. According to a report at Bloomberg, Wing will begin carrying out deliveries in two towns in Virginia, Blacksburg and Christiansburg. They're going to be partnering with local businesses to deliver products in those areas. Now, get this. Customers will use a mobile app to queue up deliveries of products, which are then flown to their house and safely lowered to their lawn using a tether on the drone.
That's pretty cool.
So I guess the drone doesn't actually
land. It lowers something down.
It lowers something down, releases it.
I hope it's not fragile. I hope you're not ordering China from Amazon.
It's freaky.
Just saying.
Man.
You know, could be a rough landing. So you know when you're in the grocery store, the supermarket, wherever, the mini mart, you know you're being watched because there are cameras everywhere, right? The answer is yes.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, be very careful.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a new technology that's being trotted out to retailers. It's a camera that tries to guess your age, your gender, even your mood when you walk by. The intent is to use the information to show targeted real-time ads on the in-store video screen. It sees what you're buying, your age, your gender, your mood, and then tempts you with an ad to buy something else. Companies are pitching retailers to bring this technology into their physical stores. They're saying it's a good way to compete with Amazon, because Amazon knows what mood you're in by what you're looking at online. So they know how to market to you. But now they're trying to just guess by your physical being when you walk past the store to see what they want you to buy next, what they can try to convince you to buy next. Now, you may not even notice the camera. They have penny size lenses. So just be wary next time you're in the grocery store. If there's any screens around showing ads, they've been watching you.
Wow. All right. Word to the wise. Are you considering unicorn armpit hair?
I already have unicorn armpit hair. It's cotton candy. It's bright pink. I never heard of that. What is unicorn armpit hair? Is that a thing?
It's what the young people are doing.
What are they doing? Your I don't even know what that means. Is it like a drink?
They're coloring their armpit hair.
Oh, come on.
Colors of the rainbow.
They should be shaving their armpit hair.
Well, no. Now you are judging them.
A little bit.
And the choices they make.
But I am.
Just a friendly reminder, Jor, that a woman's beauty, the type of beauty she chooses to ascribe to, has absolutely nothing to do with making herself sexually attractive to you.
Okay, well, I don't want to have sex with her just because she has shaved armpits. I just don't want to sit next to her on a hot, sweaty bus if she's not wearing deodorant and she has lots of hair.
Well, nothing about deodorant. We're talking about hair. If you have a problem with body hair, Jordina, especially a woman choosing to bear the kind of hair that men have conditioned women to believe is wrong, gross, or disgusting, that is your problem. Why are you so offended by hair?
Oh my God.
It must be painful to live in such a fragile little world, your world. Not my words.
Getting all this?
This is a post from Caitlin Ford. Unipit.
Who grows hair and then dyes it rainbow colors?
Yeah, again, whatever makes you happy. Miley Cyrus, no big surprise, apparently showed off her
armpit hair
colored. I mean, I find it interesting. It's curious.
Kind of like that.
It's like, again, whatever
it's
makes...
It's getting a little hot over there. Miley Cyrus's rainbow armpit hair.
Not really.
She braid it? Maybe some cornrows in there?
If she put Benjamins under her arms, you know, maybe that would, yeah.
To each his own.
Whatever makes you happy.
I'll stick with my deodorant. We have time? Yeah, Fisherman has reeled in a massive 6'9", 170-pound prehistoric fish. It's called an alligator gar. I hope I'm saying that properly. An alligator gar. It's like literally looks like a dinosaur. A dinosaur. They were fishing in Lake Texoma in Oklahoma. That's right.
Huh?
He shot the prehistoric beast.
Looks like an alligator?
Fishing with a bow over the weekend. They said, yeah, the alligator gar is the largest of the ancient gar species. Also among the largest fish found in North America in freshwater habitats. Oh, my gosh. I will never swim in a lake in Texas or Oklahoma
ever. But who fishes in Oklahoma?
I guess they do. They have a long head and sharp teeth similar to an alligator. They're over 100 million years old, the species, not this one. They're ferocious predators. They drift below the surface and then they impale waterfowl with their teeth. They sound fun. They sound really fun. The largest ever recorded was 350 pounds, 10 feet long, caught in the St. Francis River in Arkansas in the 1930s. Oof.
Okay.
They can be extinct for me. I don't ever need to swim past that.
No, thank you. No, thank you. This is interesting. You watch Jeopardy?
I'm going to
squeeze this in. James Holzhauer is really shaking things up. And he might be making the game show's accountants tremble. He has been setting records over the last 13 episodes. He won $131,000 in one episode. Mm-hmm. That's a single show record. Since Monday's episode aired, he's won around $943,000 on Jeopardy.
Good for him.
On track to reach $2.5 million, the record set by Ken Jennings, but in half the time.
Wow.
He scored his prize after 74 consecutive wins. And his best one-day tally was $75,000.
Amazing. Smart. He's a sports gambler. Professional sports gambler.
And again, these shows, including Jeopardy, take out insurance policies.
Mm-hmm.
But the question now is whether Jeopardy has a big enough insurance policy to cover the many, many millions of dollars that Holzhauer seems
good for him.
Determined.
You're smart enough. Rake it in.
Yeah, good
smart
for him.
Smart enough. Do it, baby.
Well done.
First place in the AL Central are Twins. Mike Max is going to talk Twins coming up next. But right now, it's 4:45. That is a Wixon Jewelers time check. The diamond you've always dreamed of is waiting for you at Wixon Jewelers Diamond Event May 3rd and 4th.
Boy, the Twins are getting it done. They won four in a row, five of their last six games. They are now 13-7. First place in the AL Central, game and a half ahead of Cleveland. Michael Pineda on the hill tonight. And did I mention Maxie is stuck in traffic? Where are you, Mike?
You know what? I've just got to downtown. I've been out and about this afternoon covering sports. And And then I realized, I don't know if I have enough quarters, I can get myself to 6 o'clock, but oh yeah, and then I'm going to have to move my car. And then once I move it, then I'll have to refill again. This is really fun in downtown Minneapolis.
I'm watching
with
somebody
all
get
all the new rules. Boy, they really did everybody a favor.
Mikey, I'm watching somebody get towed right outside of our window, yeah. So be careful.
Be careful, Mike.
Be careful.
Go away, man. It's Mike, the Minneapolis shakedown.
You need one of those scooters to get around.
I've got a bike, and I go back and forth a lot, but I got stuck a little. I thought we can talk twins first.
Talking traffic with you is so much more
fun.
Well,
you get animated when the subject is traffic.
Okay, let me give you another example. Today I'm coming in. I'm going to do a story at the University of Minnesota. See, it's at 10:30. I got to be there. I leave myself ample time, right? And all of a sudden, you get to 35 coming north, and it says at 46th Street, one lane. One lane. One lane.
You know what
that's all you need. That's all you need, Mike.
You can't move. So then I exit off. So I'm going to take, I know my way around town well enough now to take the back street. So I go about 2 blocks, and that road is close. The frontage road right off the freeway there, about by 37th, right around there. And so then you have to bob and weave and make it. And you think, I wonder if it wouldn't hurt them to maybe coordinate this. If you're going to shut down a side street where people are going to obviously exit because you're down to one lane, you may want to talk to the folks that are doing the freeway so that you don't do it in concert instead of just screwing everybody up. But I don't think they care that much about what I think.
Almost makes you long for winter.
It does. I mean, my gosh, how many times you drive by that 35W and nobody's working on it? You're going, I wonder why it takes so long to get these done.
All right, folks, we're out of time.
We should probably talk about sports, but it is fun. Thank you for indulging me.
Oh, Mikey, you make us laugh. Thank you.
You're the best. You are the best.
So, thoughts on the Twins?
I talk about the Twins, too, because they look good. They're hitting the ball so well. And last night you look at C.J. Cron hits a ball to the gap, and then they had timely defense. They had a relay to throw out Reddick at the plate, and that was really important in terms of where the game was at and stopping it. Jake Odorizzi, I think, was pretty frustrated. They took him out when they did, but he got the win. And then Ryan Harper came in and made it a little bit scary because he gave a big home run to Carlos Cabrera. But overall, you're going into Houston, great team, first-place team, team that expects to contend for the World Series, and you put up a 9 spot last night. And they got a lot of guys right now. This is getting fun. A lot of guys that are seeing the ball well and hitting the ball well. And you're talking about Eddie Rosario and Jorge Polanco, and Byron Buxton's been pretty good, and Garver's been good as a catcher. It's not one name, it's not two names, it's different names. And those are always the things you look for when you try to forecast whether they're going to be there for the long haul.
Yeah, amen.
Let's move on. I know you were at a presser for the Vikings, and your reaction is Scott Sewell retiring from management now.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Scott has retired before.
Didn't stick the first time.
So I think this time it'll stick because he's at an age where it makes sense as well. And he is a class act. I just saw him the other day at the health club. We had a nice long visit there. We work out sometimes at the same place. And he and Rick Spielman, the general manager there, for whatever reason, we never know why people, any of us have chemistry in life, but they've had great chemistry and a great relationship, working relationship, friendship, all those things. And they really do enjoy each other, respect each other, all those things. And it's been fun to watch. But Scott Sedwell got into scouting. A lot of people thought he might, get into something else. And he's just been a real credit to that organization. So I wish him well.
We got to run, Mikey. But thanks. Be safe
out
there.
Thank you, Mike. Be careful.
Yeah, I'm stuck. I got nowhere to go. Thanks.
Hey, the Noor trial. We'll have the latest when we return.